brother, Balon the Spring Prince. But now it seemed the wheel had turned again, and the wrong could be righted. Thus did Lord Corlys and his wife, the Princess Rhaenys, arrive at Harrenhal in high state, using the wealth and influence of House Valerian to persuade the lords assembled that their son, Laenor, should be recognised as heir to the Iron Throne. In these efforts they were joined by the Lord of Storm's End, Boromund Baratheon, great-uncle to Rhaenys and great-great-uncle to the boy Laenor, by Lord Stark of Winterfell, Lord Manderly of White Harbour, Lord Dustin of Barrowton, Lord Blackwood of Raventree, Lord Var-Emon of Sharp Point, Lord Celtigar of Claw Isle, and others. They were nowhere near enough. Though Lord and Lady Valerian were eloquent and open-handed in their efforts on behalf of their son, the decision of the Great Council was never truly in doubt. By a lopsided margin, the lords assembled chose Viserys Targaryen as the rightful heir to the Iron Throne. Though the maesters who tallied the votes never revealed the actual numbers, it was said afterward that the vote had been more than 20-1. King Jaehaerys had not attended the council, but when word of their verdict reached him, his grace thanked the lords for their service and gratefully conferred the style Prince of Dragonstone upon his grandson Viserys. Storm's End and Driftmark accepted the decision, if grudgingly. The vote had been so overwhelming that even Laenor's father and mother saw that they could not hope to prevail. In the eyes of many, the Great Council of 101 AC thereby established an iron precedent on matters of succession. Regardless of seniority, the Iron Throne of Westeros could not pass to a woman, nor through a woman to her male descendants. Of the last years in the reign of King Jaehaerys, little and less need be said. Prince Balon had served his father as Hand of the King as well as Prince of Dragonstone, but after his death his grace elected to divide those honours. As his new hand he called upon Ser Otto Hightower, younger brother to Lord Hightower of Oldtown. Ser Otto brought his wife and children to court with him, and served King Jaehaerys faithfully for the years remaining to him. As the old king's strength and wits began to fail, he was oft confined to his bed. Ser Otto's precocious 15-year-old daughter, Alicent, became his constant companion, fetching his grace his meals, reading to him, helping him to bathe and dress himself. The old king sometimes mistook her for one of his daughters, calling her by their names. Near the end, he grew certain she was his daughter Sarah, returned to him from beyond the narrow sea. In the year 103 AC, King Jaehaerys I Targaryen died in his bed, as Lady Alicent was reading to him from Septon Barth's Unnatural History. His grace was 69 years of age, and had reigned over the Seven Kingdoms since coming to the Iron Throne at the age of 14. His remains were burned in the Dragon Pit, his ashes interred with good Queen Alysanne's on Dragonstone. All of Westeros mourned. Even in Dawn, where his writ had not extended, men wept and women tore their garments. In accordance with his own wishes, and the decision of the Great Council of 101, his grandson Viserys succeeded him, mounting the Iron Throne as King Viserys I Targaryen. At the time of his ascent, King Viserys was 26 years old. He had been married for a decade to a cousin, Lady Emma of House Arryn, herself a granddaughter of the old king and good Queen Alysanne through her mother, the late Princess Daella, died 82 AC. Lady Emma had suffered several miscarriages, and the death of one son in the cradle over the course of her marriage. Some maesters felt she had been married and bedded too young. But she had also given birth to a healthy daughter, Rhaenyra, born 97 AC. The new king and his queen both doted on the girl, their only living child. Many consider the reign of King Viserys I to represent the apex of Targaryen power in Westeros. Beyond a doubt, there were more lords and princes claiming the blood of the dragon than at any period before or since. Though the Targaryens had continued their traditional practice of marrying brother to sister, uncle to niece and cousin to cousin wherever possible, there had also been important matches outside the royal family, the fruit of which would play important roles in the war to come. There were more dragons than ever before as well, and several of the she-dragons were regularly producing clutches of eggs. Not all of these eggs hatched, but many did, and it became customary for the fathers and mothers of newborn princelings to place a dragon's egg in their cradles, following a tradition that Princess Rhaena had begun many years before. The children so blessed invariably bonded with the hatchlings to become dragon riders. Viserys I, Targaryen, had a generous, amiable nature, and was well loved by his lords and small folk alike. The reign of the Young King, as the commons called him upon his ascent, was peaceful and prosperous. His grace's open-handedness was legendary, and the Red Keep became a place of song and splendour. King Viserys and Queen Emma hosted many a feast and tourney, and lavished gold, offices, and honours on their favourites. At the centre of the merriment, cherished and adored by all, was their only surviving child, Princess Rhaenyra. The little girl the court singers dubbed the Realm's Delight. Though only 6 when her father came to the Iron Throne, Rhaenyra Targaryen was a precocious child, bright and bold, and beautiful as only one of dragon's blood can be beautiful. At 7, she became a dragon rider, taking to the sky on the young dragon she named Syrax, after a goddess of old Valyria. At 8, the princess was placed into service as a cupbearer, but for her own father, the king. At table, at tourney, and at court, King Viserys thereafter was seldom seen without his daughter by his side. Meanwhile, the tedium of rule was left largely to the king's small council and his hand. Sir Otto Hightower had continued in that office, serving the grandson as he had the grandsire. An able man, all agreed, though many found him proud, brusque, and haughty. The longer he served, the more imperious Sir Otto became, it was said, and many great lords and princes came to resent his manner and envy him his access to the Iron Throne. The greatest of his rivals was Daemon Targaryen, the king's ambitious, impetuous, moody younger brother. As charming as he was hot-tempered, Prince Daemon had earned his knight's spurs at 6 and 10, and had been given Dark Sister by the old king himself in recognition of his prowess. Though he had wed the Lady of Runestone in 97 AC, during the old king's reign, the marriage had not been a success. Prince Daemon found the Vale of Arryn boring. "In the Vale, the men fuck sheep," he wrote. "You cannot fault them. Their sheep are prettier than their women." And soon developed a mislike of his lady wife, whom he called "my bronze bitch," after the runic bronze armour worn by the lords of House Royce. Upon the accession of his brother to the Iron Throne, the prince petitioned to have his marriage set aside. Viserys denied the request, but did allow Daemon to return to court, where he sat on the small council, serving as master of coin from 103 to 104, and master of laws for half a year in 104. Governance bored this warrior prince, however. He did better when King Viserys made him commander of the city watch. Finding the watchmen ill-armed and clad in oddments and rags, Daemon equipped each man with dirk, short sword, and cudgel, armoured them in black ring-mail, with breastplates for the officers, and gave them long golden cloaks that they might wear with pride. Ever since, the men of the city watch have been known as gold cloaks. Prince Daemon took eagerly to the work of the gold cloaks, and oft prowled the alleys of King's Landing with his men. That he made the city more orderly, no man could doubt, but his discipline was a brutal one. He delighted in cutting off the hands of pickpockets, gelding rapists, and slitting the noses of thieves, and slew 3 men in street brawls during his first year as commander. Before long, the prince was well known in all the low places of King's Landing. He became a familiar sight in wine sinks, where he drank for free, and gambling pits, where he always left with more coin than when he entered. Though he sampled countless whores in the city's brothels, and was said to have an especial fondness for deflowering maidens, a certain Lycene dancing girl soon became his favourite. Miseria was the name she went by, though her rivals and enemies called her Misery, the White Worm. As King Viserys had no living son, Daemon regarded himself as the rightful heir to the Iron Throne and coveted the title Prince of Dragonstone, which his grace refused to grant him. But by the end of year 105 AC, he was known to his friends as the Prince of the City, and to the small folk as Lord Fleabottom. Though the king did not wish Daemon to succeed him, he remained fond of his younger brother, and was quick to forgive his many offences. Princess Rhaenyra was also enamoured of her uncle, for Daemon was ever attentive to her. Whenever he crossed the narrow sea upon his dragon, he brought her some exotic gift on his return. The king had grown soft and plump over the years. Viserys never claimed another dragon after Balerion's death, nor did he have much taste for the joust, the hunt, or swordplay, whereas Prince Daemon excelled in these spheres, and seemed all that his brother was not, lean and hard, a renowned warrior, dashing, daring, more than a little dangerous. And here we must digress to say a word about our sources, for much of what happened in the years that followed happened behind closed doors, in the privacy of stairwells, council rooms and bedchambers, and the full truth of it will likely never be known. We have, of course, the chronicles laid down by Grand Maester Runciter and his successors, and many a court document as well, all the royal decrees and proclamations. But these tell only a small part of the story. For the rest, we must look to accounts written decades later, by the children and grandchildren of those caught up in the events of these times, lords and knights reporting events witnessed by their forebears, third-hand recollections of aged serving men relating the scandals of their youth. Whilst these are undoubtedly of use, so much time passed between the event and the recording that many confusions and contradictions have inevitably crept in, nor do these remembrances always agree. Unfortunately, this is also true of the two accounts by first-hand observers that have come down to us. Septon Eustace, who served in the royal sept in the Red Keep during much of this time and later rose to the ranks of the most devout, set down the most detailed history of this period. As a confidant and confessor to King Viserys and his queens, Eustace was well placed to know much and more of what went on. Nor was he reticent about recording even the most shocking and salacious rumours and accusations, though the bulk of The Reign of King Viserys, First of His Name, and The Dance of the Dragons that came after, remains a sober and somewhat ponderous history. To balance Eustace, we have The Testimony of Mushroom, based upon the verbal account of the court fool, set down by a scribe who failed to append his name, who at various times capered for the amusement of King Viserys, Princess Rhaenyra, and both Aegons, the second and third. A 3-foot-tall dwarf, possessed of an enormous head and, he avers, an even more enormous member, Mushroom was thought feeble-minded, so kings and lords and princes did not scruple to hide their secrets from him. Whereas Septon Eustace records the secrets of bedchamber and brothel in hushed, condemnatory tones, Mushroom delights in the same, and his testimony consists of little but ribald tales and gossip, piling stabbings, poisonings, betrayals, seductions, and debaucheries one atop the other. How much of this can be believed is a question the honest historian cannot hope to answer, but it is worth noting that King Balor the Blessed decreed that every copy of Mushroom's Chronicle should be burned. Fortunately for us, a few escaped his fires. Septon Eustace and Mushroom do not always agree upon particulars, and at times their accounts are considerably at variance with one another, and with the court records and the chronicles of Grand Maester Runciter and his successors. Yet their tales do explain much and more than might otherwise seem puzzling, and later accounts confirm enough of their stories to suggest that they contain at least some portion of truth. The question of what to believe and what to doubt remains for each student to decide. On one point, Mushroom, Septon Eustace, Grand Maester Runciter, and all our other sources concur. Sir Otto Hightower, the king's hand, took a great dislike to the king's brother. It was Sir Otto who convinced Viserys to remove Prince Daemon as master of coin, and then as master of laws, actions the hand soon came to regret. As commander of the city watch, with 2,000 men under his command, Daemon waxed more powerful than ever. "On no account can Prince Daemon be allowed to ascend to the Iron Throne," the hand wrote his brother, Lord of Old Town. "He would be a second Maegor the Cruel, or worse." It was Sir Otto's wish, then, that Princess Rhaenyra succeed her father. "Better the realm's delight than Lord Fleabottom," he wrote. Nor was he alone in his opinion. Yet his party faced a formidable hurdle. If the precedent set by the Great Council of 101 was followed, A male claimant must prevail over a female. In the absence of a true-born son, the king's brother would come before the king's daughter, as Balon had come before Rhaenys in 92 AC. As for the king's own views, all the chronicles agree that King Viserys hated dissension. Though far from blind to his brother's flaws, he cherished his memories of the free-spirited, adventurous boy that Daemon had been. His daughter was his life's great joy, he often said, but a brother is a brother. Time and time again he strove to make peace between Prince Daemon and Ser Otto, but the enmity between the two men roiled endlessly beneath the false smiles they wore at court. When pressed upon the matter, King Viserys would only say that he was certain his queen would soon present him with a son. And in 105 AC, he announced to the court and small council that Queen Emma was once again with child. During that same fateful year, Sir Criston Cole was appointed to the King's Guard to fill the place created by the death of the legendary Sir Ryan Redwine. Born the son of a steward in service to Lord Dondarrion of Blackhaven, Sir Criston was a comely young knight of 23 years. He first came to the attention of the court when he won the melee held at Maidenpool in honour of King Viserys's accession. In the final moments of the fight, Sir Criston knocked Dark Sister from Prince Daemon's hand with his Morning Star, to the delight of his grace and the fury of the prince. Afterward he gave the 7-year-old Princess Rhaenyra the victor's laurel, and begged for her favour to wear in the joust. In the lists, he defeated Prince Daemon once again, and unhorsed both of the celebrated Cargill twins, Sir Arryk and Sir Eric of the King's Guard, before falling to Lord Lymond Malister. With his pale green eyes, coal-black hair and easy charm, Cole soon became a favourite of all the ladies at court, not the least amongst them Rhaenyra Targaryen herself. So smitten was she by the charms of the man she called My White Knight, that Rhaenyra begged her father to name Sir Criston her own personal shield and protector. His grace indulged her in this, as in so much else. Thereafter Sir Criston always wore her favour in the lists, and became a fixture at her side during feasts and frolics. Not long after Sir Criston donned his white cloak, King Viserys invited Lionel Strong, Lord of Harrenhal, to join the small council as Master of Laws. A big man, burly and balding, Lord Strong enjoyed a formidable reputation as a battler. Those who did not know him oft took him for a brute, mistaking his silences and slowness of speech for stupidity. This was far from the truth. Lord Lionel had studied at the Citadel as a youth, earning 6 links of his chain before deciding that a maester's life was not for him. He was literate and learned, his knowledge of the laws of the 7 kingdoms exhaustive. Thrice wed and thrice a widower, the Lord of Harrenhal brought 2 maiden daughters and 2 sons to court with him. The girls became handmaids to Princess Rhaenyra, whilst their eldest brother, Sir Harwin Strong, called Breakbones, was made a captain in the gold cloaks. The younger boy, Larys the Clubfoot, joined the king's confessors. Thus did matters stand in King's Landing late in the year 105 AC, when Queen Emma was brought to bed in Maegor's Holdfast and died whilst giving birth to the son that Viserys Targaryen had desired for so long. The boy, named Balon after the king's father, survived her only by a day, leaving king and court bereft, save perhaps for Prince Daemon, who was observed in a brothel on the Street of Silk, making drunken japes with his high-born cronies about the heir for a day. When word of this got back to the king, legend says that it was the whore sitting in Daemon's lap who informed on him, but evidence suggests it was actually one of his drinking companions, a captain in the gold cloaks, eager for advancement. Viserys became livid. His grace had finally had a surfeit of his ungrateful brother and his ambitions. Once his mourning for his wife and son had run its course, the king moved swiftly to resolve the long-simmering issue of the succession. Disregarding the precedents set by King Jaehaerys in 92 and the Great Council in 101, Viserys declared his daughter, Rhaenyra, to be his rightful heir, and named her Princess of Dragonstone. In a lavish ceremony at King's Landing, hundreds of lords did obeisance to the realm's delight as she sat at her father's feet at the base of the Iron Throne, swearing to honour and defend her right of succession. Prince Daemon was not amongst them, however. Furious at the king's decree, the prince quit King's Landing, resigning from the city watch. He went first to Dragonstone, taking his paramour, Miseria, with him upon the back of his dragon Caraxes, the lean red beast the small folk called the Blood Worm. There he remained for half a year, during which time he got Miseria with child. When he learned that his concubine was pregnant, Prince Daemon presented her with a dragon's egg. But in this he again went too far and woke his brother's wrath. King Viserys commanded him to return the egg, send his whore away, and return to his lawful wife, or else be attainted as a traitor. The prince obeyed, though with ill grace, dispatching Miseria, eggless, back to Lys, whilst he himself flew to Runestone in the Vale and the unwelcome company of his bronze bitch. But Miseria lost her child during a storm on the narrow sea. When word reached Prince Daemon, he spoke no syllable of grief, but his heart hardened against the king, his brother. Thereafter he spoke of King Viserys only with disdain, and began to brood day and night on the succession. Though Princess Rhaenyra had been proclaimed her father's successor, there were many in the realm at court and beyond it who still hoped that Viserys might father a male heir, for the young king was not yet 30. Grand Maester Runciter was the first to urge his grace to remarry, even suggesting a suitable choice, the Lady Lena Valerian, who had just turned 12. A fiery young maiden, freshly flowered, Lady Lena had inherited the beauty of a true Targaryen from her mother, Rhaenys, and a bold, adventurous spirit from her father, the Sea Snake. As Lord Corlys loved to sail, Lena loved to fly, and had claimed for her own no less amount than mighty Vhagar, the oldest and largest of the Targaryen dragons since the passing of the Black Dread in 94 AC. By taking the girl to wife, the king could heal the rift that had grown up between the Iron Throne and Driftmark, Runciter pointed out, and Lena would surely make a splendid queen. Viserys I Targaryen was not the strongest-willed of kings, it must be said. Always amiable and anxious to please, he relied greatly on the counsel of the men around him, and did as they bade more oft than not. In this instance, however, his grace had his own notion, and no amount of argument would sway him from his course. He would marry again, yes, but not to a 12-year-old girl, and not for reasons of state. Another woman had caught his eye. He announced his intention to wed Lady Alicent of House Hightower, the clever and lovely 18-year-old daughter of the king's hand, the girl who had read to King Jaehaerys as he lay dying. The Hightowers of Oldtown were an ancient and noble family, of impeccable lineage. There could be no possible objection to the king's choice of bride. Even so, there were those who murmured that the hand had risen above himself, that he had brought his daughter to court with this in mind. A few even cast doubt on Lady Alicent's virtue, suggesting she had welcomed King Viserys into her bed even before Queen Emma's death. These calumnies were never proved, though Mushroom repeats them in his testimony, and goes so far as to claim that reading was not the only service Lady Alicent performed for the old king in his bedchamber. In the Vale, Prince Daemon reportedly whipped the serving man who brought the news to him within an inch of his life. Nor was the Sea Snake pleased when word reached Driftmark. House Valerian had been passed over once again. His daughter, Lena, scorned, just as his son Laenor had been scorned by the Great Council, and his wife by the old king back in 92 AC. Only Lady Lena herself seemed untroubled. Her ladyship shows far more interest in flying than in boys, the maester at High Tide wrote to the Citadel. When King Viserys took Alicent Hightower to wife in 106 AC, House Valerian was notable for its absence. Princess Rhaenyra poured for her stepmother at the feast, and Queen Alicent kissed her and named her daughter. The princess was amongst the women who disrobed the king and delivered him to the bedchamber of his bride. Laughter and love ruled the Red Keep that night, whilst across Blackwater Bay, Lord Corlys the Sea Snake welcomed the king's brother Prince Daemon to a war council. The prince had suffered all he could stand of the Vale of Arryn, Runestone, and his lady wife. Dark's sister was made for nobler tasks than slaughtering sheep, he is reported to have told the Lord of the Tides. She has a thirst for blood. But it was not rebellion that the prince had in mind. He saw another path to power. The Stepstones, the chain of rocky islands between Dawn and the disputed lands of Essos, had long been a haunt of outlaws, exiles, wreckers, and pirates. Of themselves, the isles were of little worth, but placed as they were, they controlled the sea lanes to and from the narrow sea, and merchant ships passing through those waters were often preyed on by their inhabitants. Still, for centuries such depredations had remained no more than a nuisance. 10 years earlier, however, the free cities of Lys, Myr, and Tyrosh had put aside their ancient enmities to make common cause in a war against Volantis. After defeating the Volantines in the Battle of the Borderland, the three victorious cities had entered into an eternal alliance and formed a strong new power, the Triarchy, better known in Westeros as the Kingdom of the Three Daughters, as each of the three cities considered itself a daughter of Valyria of old, or, more rudely, the Kingdom of the Three Whores, though this kingdom was without a king, being governed by a council of 33 magisters. Once Volantis sued for peace and withdrew from the disputed lands, the Three Daughters had turned their gaze westward, sweeping over the Stepstones with their combined armies and fleets under the command of the Myrish Prince Admiral Kragas Treha, who earned the sobriquet Kragas Crabfeeder when he staked out hundreds of captured pirates on the wet sands to drown beneath the rising tide. The conquest and annexation of the Stepstones by the Kingdom of the Three Daughters at first met with only approval from the Lords of Westeros. Order had replaced chaos, and if the Three Daughters demanded a toll of any ship passing through their waters, that seemed a small price to pay to be rid of the pirates. The avarice of Kragas Crabfeeder and his partners in conquest soon turned feelings against them, however. The toll was raised again, and yet again, soon becoming so ruinous that merchants who had once paid gladly now sought to slip past the galleys of the Triarchy as once they had the pirates. Drehar and his Lysine and Taroshi co-admirals seemed to be vying with each other to see who was the greediest, men complained. The Lysini became especially loathed, for they claimed more than coin from passing ships, taking off women, girls, and comely young boys to serve in their pleasure gardens and pillow houses. Amongst those thus enslaved was Lady Joanna Swan, a 15-year-old niece of the Lord of Stonehelm. When her infamously niggardly uncle refused to pay the ransom, she was sold to a pillow house, where she rose to become the celebrated courtesan known as the Black Swan, and ruler of Lys in all but name. Alas, her tale, however fascinating, has no bearing upon our present history. Of all the lords of Westeros, none suffered so much from these practices as Corlys Velaryon, Lord of the Tides, whose fleets had made him as wealthy and powerful as any man in the Seven Kingdoms. The Sea Snake was determined to put an end to the Triarchy's rule over the Stepstones, and in Daemon Targaryen he found a willing partner, eager for the gold and glory that victory in war would bring him. Shunning the king's wedding, they laid their plans in high tide on the Isle Driftmark. Lord Valerian would command the fleet, Prince Daemon the army. They would be greatly outnumbered by the forces of the Three Daughters, but the prince would also bring to battle the fires of his dragon Caraxes, the Bloodworm. It is not our purpose here to recount the details of the private war Daemon Targaryen and Corlys Velaryon waged on the Stepstones. Suffice it to say that the fighting began in 106 AC. Prince Daemon had little difficulty assembling an army of landless adventurers and second sons, and won many victories during the first 2 years of the conflict. In 108 AC, when at last he came face to face with Kragas Crabfeeder, he slew him single-handed, and cut off his head with Dark Sister. King Viserys, doubtless pleased to be rid of his troublesome brother, supported his efforts with regular infusions of gold, and by 109 AC, Daemon Targaryen and his army of sellswords and cutthroats controlled all but two of the islands, and the Sea Snake's fleets had taken firm control of the waters between. During this brief moment of victory, Prince Daemon declared himself King of the Stepstones and the Narrow Sea, and Lord Corlys placed a crown upon his head. But their kingdom was far from secure. The next year, the Kingdom of the Three Daughters dispatched a fresh invasion force under the command of a devious Tyroshi captain named Rakalio Rindum, surely one of the most curious and flamboyant rogues in the annals of history, and Dawn joined the war in alliance with the Triarchy. Fighting resumed. Though the Stepstones were engulfed in blood and fire, King Viserys and his court remained unperturbed. "Let Daemon play at war," his grace is reported to have said. "It keeps him out of trouble." Viserys was a man of peace, and during these years, King's Landing was an endless round of feasts, balls and tourneys, where mummers and singers heralded the birth of each new Targaryen princeling. Queen Alicent had soon proved to be as fertile as she was pretty. In 107 AC she bore the king a healthy son, naming him Aegon after the Conqueror. 2 years later she produced a daughter for the king, Helena. In 110 AC she bore him a second son, Aemond, who is said to be half the size of his elder brother, but twice as fierce. Yet Princess Rhaenyra continued to sit at the foot of the Iron Throne when her father held court, and his grace began bringing her to meetings of the small council as well. Though many lords and knights sought her favour, the princess had eyes only for Ser Criston Cole, the young champion of the Kingsguard and her constant companion. Ser Criston protects the princess from her enemies. But who protects the princess from Ser Criston? Queen Alicent asked one day at court. The amity between her grace and her stepdaughter had proved short-lived, for both Rhaenyra and Alicent aspired to be the first lady of the realm, and though the queen had given the king not one but two male heirs, Viserys had done nothing to change the order of succession. The Princess of Dragonstone remained his acknowledged heir, with half the lords of Westeros sworn to defend her rights. Those who asked, "What of the ruling of the Great Council of 101?" found their words falling on deaf ears. The matter had been decided, so far as King Viserys was concerned. It was not an issue his grace cared to revisit. Still, questions persisted, not the least from Queen Alicent herself. Loudest amongst her supporters was her father, Ser Otto Hightower, Hand of the King. Pushed too far on the matter in 109 AC, Viserys stripped Ser Otto of his chain of office and named in his place the taciturn Lord of Harrenhal, Lionel Strong. "This hand will not hector me," his grace proclaimed. Even after Ser Otto had returned to Old Town, a Queen's Party still existed at court, a group of powerful lords friendly to Queen Alicent and supportive of the rights of her sons. Against them was pitted the Party of the Princess. King Viserys loved both his wife and daughter, and hated conflict and contention. He strove all his days to keep the peace between his women, and to please both with gifts and gold and honours. So long as he lived and ruled and kept the balance, the feasts and tourneys continued as before, and peace prevailed throughout the realm, though there were some, sharp-eyed, who observed the dragons of one party snapping and spitting flame at the dragons of the other party, whenever they chanced to pass near each other. In 111 AC, a great tourney was held at King's Landing on the 5th anniversary of the king's marriage to Queen Alicent. At the opening feast, the queen wore a green gown, whilst the princess dressed dramatically in Targaryen red and black. Note was taken, and thereafter it became the custom to refer to greens and blacks when talking of the queen's party and the party of the princess, respectively. In the tourney itself, the blacks had much the better of it, when Ser Criston Cole, wearing Princess Rhaenyra's favour, unhorsed all of the queen's champions, including two of her cousins and her youngest brother, Sir Gawain Hightower. Yet one was there who wore neither green nor black, but rather gold and silver. Prince Daemon had at last returned to court. Wearing a crown and styling himself King of the Narrow Sea, he appeared unannounced in the skies above King's Landing on his dragon, circling thrice above the tourney grounds. But when at last he came to earth, he knelt before his brother and offered up his crown as a token of his love and fealty. Viserys returned the crown and kissed Daemon on both cheeks, welcoming him home, and the lords and commons sent up a thunderous cheer as the sons of the Spring Prince were reconciled. Amongst those cheering loudest was Princess Rhaenyra, who was thrilled at the return of her favourite uncle and begged him to stay a while. This much is known. As to what happened afterward, here we must look to our more dubious chroniclers. Prince Daemon did remain at King's Landing for half a year. That is beyond dispute. He even resumed his seat on the small council, according to Grand Maester Runciter, but neither age nor exile had changed his nature. Daemon soon took up again with old companions from the Gold Cloaks, and returned to the establishments along the Street of Silk, where he had been such a valued patron. Though he treated Queen Alicent with all the courtesy due her station, there was no warmth between them, and men said that the prince was notably cool toward her children, especially his nephews Aegon and Aemond, whose birth had pushed him still lower in the order of succession. Princess Rhaenyra was a different matter. Daemon spent long hours in her company, enthralling her with tales of his journeys and battles. He gave her pearls and silks and books, and a jade tiara said once to have belonged to the Empress of Lung, read poems to her, dined with her, hawked with her, sailed with her, entertained her by making mock of the greens at court, the lickspittles fawning over Queen Alicent and her children. He praised her beauty, declaring her to be the fairest maid in all the Seven Kingdoms. Uncle and niece began to fly together almost daily, racing Syrax against Caraxes to Dragonstone and back. Here is where our sources diverge. Grand Maester Runciter says only that the brothers quarrelled again, and Prince Daemon departed King's Landing to return to the Stepstones and his wars. Of the cause of the quarrel he does not speak. Others assert that it was at Queen Alicent's urging that Viserys sent Daemon away. But Septon Eustace and Mushroom tell another tale, or rather two such tales, each different from the other. Eustace, the less salacious of the two, writes that Prince Daemon seduced his niece, the princess, and claimed her maidenhood. When the lovers were discovered abed together by Sir Arik Cargill of the King's Guard and brought before the king, Rhaenyra insisted she was in love with her uncle and pleaded with her father for leave to marry him. King Viserys would not hear of it, however, and reminded his daughter that Prince Daemon already had a wife. In his wrath, he confined his daughter to her chambers, told his brother to depart, and commanded both of them never to speak of what had happened. The tale as told by Mushroom is far more depraved, as is oft the case with his testimony. According to the dwarf, it was Sir Criston Cole that the princess yearned for, not Prince Daemon. But Sir Criston was a true knight, noble and chaste and mindful of his vows, and though he was in her company day and night, he had never so much as kissed her, nor made any declaration of his love. "When he looks at you, he sees the little girl you were, not the woman you've become," Daemon told his niece. "But I can teach you how to make him see you as a woman." He began by giving her kissing lessons, if Mushroom can be believed. From there the prince went on to show his niece how best to touch a man to bring him pleasure, an exercise that sometimes involved Mushroom himself and his alleged enormous member. Daemon taught the girl to disrobe enticingly, suckled at her teats to make them larger and more sensitive, and flew with her on dragonback to lonely rocks in Blackwater Bay, where they could disport naked all day unobserved, and the princess could practice the art of pleasuring a man with her mouth. At night he would smuggle her from her rooms dressed as a page boy, and take her secretly to brothels on the Street of Silk, where the princess could observe men and women in the act of love and learn more of these womanly arts from the harlots of King's Landing. Just how long these lessons continued, Mushroom does not say. But unlike Septon Eustace, he insists that Princess Rhaenyra remained a maiden, for she wished to preserve her innocence as a gift for her beloved. But when at last she approached her white knight using all she had learned, Sir Criston was horrified and spurned her. The whole tale soon came out in no small part thanks to Mushroom himself. King Viserys at first refused to believe a word of it, until Prince Daemon confirmed the tale was true. "Give the girl to me, to wife," he purportedly told his brother. "Who else would take her now?" Instead, King Viserys sent him into exile, never to return to the Seven Kingdoms on pain of death. Lord Strong, the king's hand, argued that the prince should be put to death immediately as a traitor, but Septon Eustace reminded his grace that no man is as accursed as the kinslayer. Of the aftermath, these things are certain. Daemon Targaryen returned to the Stepstones and resumed his struggle for those barren, storm-swept rocks. Grand Maester Runciter and Sir Harold Westerling both died in 112 AC. Sir Criston Cole was named the Lord Commander of the King's Guard in Sir Harold's place, and the Archmaesters of the Citadel sent Maester Melos to the Red Keep to take up the Grand Maester's chain and duties. Elsewise, King's Landing returned to its customary tranquillity for the best part of 2 years, until 113 AC, when Princess Rhaenyra turned 16, took possession of Dragonstone as her own seat, and married. Long before any man had reason to doubt her innocence, the question of selecting a suitable consort for Rhaenyra had been of concern to King Viserys and his council. Great lords and dashing knights fluttered around her like moths around a flame, vying for her favour. When Rhaenyra visited the Trident in 112, the sons of Lord Bracken and Lord Blackwood fought a duel over her, and a younger son of House Frey made so bold as to ask openly for her hand. Fool Frey, he was called thereafter. In the west, Sir Jason Lannister and his twin, Sir Tyland, vied for her during a feast at Casterly Rock. The sons of Lord Tully of Riverrun, Lord Tyrell of Highgarden, Lord Oakheart of Old Oak, and Lord Tarley of Hornhill paid court to the princess, as did the Hand's eldest son, Sir Harwin Strong. Breakbones, as he was called, was heir to Harrenhal and said to be the strongest man in the Seven Kingdoms. Viserys even talked of wedding Rhaenyra to the Prince of Dawn, as a way of bringing the Dornish into the realm. Queen Alicent had her own candidate. Her eldest son, Prince Aegon, Rhaenyra's half-brother. But Aegon was a boy, the princess 10 years his elder. Moreover, the two half-siblings had never gotten on well. All the more reason to bind them together in marriage, the queen argued. Viserys did not agree. The boy is Alicent's own blood, he told Lord Strong. She wants him on the throne. The best choice, king and small council finally agreed, would be Rhaenyra's cousin, Laenor Valerian. Though the great council of 101 had ruled against his claim, the Valerian boy remained a grandson of Prince Aemon Targaryen of hallowed memory, a great-grandson of the old king himself. Such a match would unite and strengthen the royal bloodline, and regain the Iron Throne the friendship of the Sea Snake with his powerful fleet. One objection was raised. Laenor Valerian was now 19 years of age, yet had never shown any interest in women. Instead, he surrounded himself with handsome squires of his own age, and was said to prefer their company. But Grand Maester Melos dismissed this concern out of hand. "What of it?" he said. "I do not like the taste of fish, but when fish is served I eat it." Thus was the match decided. King and council had neglected to consult the princess, however, and Rhaenyra proved to be very much her father's daughter, with her own notions about whom she wished to wed. The princess knew much and more about Laenor Valerian and had no wish to be his bride. "My half-brothers would be more to his taste," she told the king. The princess always took care to refer to Queen Alicent's sons as half-brothers, never as brothers. And though his grace reasoned with her, pleaded with her, shouted at her and called her an ungrateful daughter, no words of his could budge her. Until the king brought up the question of succession. What a king had done, a king could undo, Viserys pointed out. She would wed as he commanded, or he would make her half-brother Aegon his heir in place of her. At this, the princess's will gave way. Septon Eustace says she fell at her father's knees and begged for his forgiveness. Mushroom that she spat in her father's face. But both agree that in the end she consented to be married. And here again our sources differ. That night, Septon Eustace reports, Sir Criston Cole slipped into the princess's bedchamber to confess his love for her. He told Rhaenyra that he had a ship waiting on the bay, and begged her to flee with him across the narrow sea. They would be wed in Tyrosh or Old Volantis, where her father's writ did not run, and no one would care that Sir Criston had betrayed his vows as a member of the King's Guard. His prowess with sword and Morningstar was such that he did not doubt he could find some merchant prince to take him into service. But Rhaenyra refused him. She was the blood of the dragon, she reminded him, and meant for more than to live out her life as the wife of a common sellsword. And if he could set aside his King's Guard vows, why would marriage vows mean any more to him? Mushroom tells a very different tale. In his version, it was Princess Rhaenyra who went to Ser Criston, not him to her. She found him alone, in White Sword Tower, barred the door, and slipped off her cloak to reveal her nakedness underneath. "I saved my maidenhead for you," she told him. "Take it now, as proof of my love. It will mean little and less to my betrothed, and perhaps when he learns that I am not chaste, he will refuse me." Yet, for all her beauty, her entreaties fell on deaf ears, for Ser Criston was a man of honour and true to his vows. Even when Rhaenyra used the arts she had learned from her uncle Daemon, Cole would not be swayed. Scorned and furious, the princess donned her cloak again and swept out into the night, where she chanced to encounter Sir Harwin Strong, returning from a night of revelry in the stews of the city. Breakbones had long desired the princess and lacked Ser Criston's scruples. It was he who took Rhaenyra's innocence, shedding her maiden's blood upon the sword of his manhood. According to Mushroom, who claims to have found them in bed at break of day. However it happened, whether the princess scorned the knight or he her, from that day forward the love that Ser Criston Cole had formerly borne for Rhaenyra Targaryen turned to loathing and disdain, and the man who had hitherto been the princess's constant companion and champion became the most bitter of her foes. Not long thereafter, Rhaenyra set sail for Driftmark on the Sea Snake, accompanied by her handmaids, two of them the daughters of the Hand and sisters to Ser Harwin, the Fool Mushroom, and her new champion, none other than Breakbones himself. In 114 AC, Rhaenyra Targaryen, Princess of Dragonstone, took to husband Ser Laenor Valerian, knighted a fortnight before the wedding, since it was deemed necessary the prince consort be a knight. The bride was 17 years old, the groom 20, and all agreed that they made a handsome couple. The wedding was celebrated with 7 days of feasts and jousting, the greatest tourney in many a year. Amongst the competitors were Queen Alicent's siblings, 5 sworn brothers of the Kingsguard, Breakbones, and the groom's favourite, Ser Geoffrey Lonmouth, known as the Knight of Kisses. When Rhaenyra bestowed her garter on Ser Harwin, her new husband laughed, and gave one of his own to Ser Geoffrey. Denied Rhaenyra's favour, Criston Cole turned to Queen Alicent instead. Wearing her token, the young Lord Commander of the Kingsguard defeated all challengers, fighting in a black fury. He left Breakbones with a broken collarbone and a shattered elbow, prompting Mushroom to name him Broken Bones thereafter. But it was the Knight of Kisses who felt the fullest measure of his wrath. Cole's favourite weapon was the Morning Star, and the blows he rained down on Ser Laenor's champion cracked his helm and left him senseless in the mud. Born bloody from the field, Ser Geoffrey died without recovering consciousness 6 days later. Mushroom tells us that Ser Laenor spent every hour of those days at his bedside, and wept bitterly when the stranger claimed him. King Viserys was most wroth as well. A joyous celebration had become the occasion of grief and recrimination. It was said that Queen Alicent did not share his displeasure, however. Soon after, she asked that Ser Criston Cole be made her personal protector. The coolness between the king's wife and the king's daughter was plain for all to see. Even envoys from the Free Cities made note of it in letters sent back to Pentos, Braavos, and Old Volantis. Ser Laenor returned to Driftmark thereafter, leaving many to wonder if his marriage had ever been consummated. The princess remained at court, surrounded by her friends and admirers. Ser Criston Cole was not amongst them, having gone over entirely to the Queen's party, the Greens. But the massive and redoubtable Breakbones, or Broken Bones as Mushroom had it, filled his place, becoming the foremost of the blacks, ever at Rhaenyra's side at feast and ball and hunt. Her husband raised no objections. Ser Laenor preferred the comforts of High Tide, where he soon found a new favourite in a household knight named Ser Carl Corry. Thereafter, though he joined his wife for important court events where his presence was expected, Ser Laenor spent most of his days apart from the princess. Septon Eustace says they shared a bed no more than 12 times. Mushroom concurs, but adds that Carl Corry oft shared that bed as well. It aroused the princess to watch the men disporting with one another, he tells us, and from time to time the two would include her in their pleasures. Yet Mushroom contradicts himself, for elsewhere in his testimony he claims that the princess would leave her husband with his lover on such nights and seek her own solace in the arms of Harwin Strong. Whatever the truth of these tales, it was soon announced that the princess was with child. Born in the waning days of 114 AC, the boy was a large, strapping lad with brown hair, brown eyes, and a pug nose. Selena had the aquiline nose, silver-white hair, and purple eyes that bespoke his Valyrian blood. Elenor's wish to name the child Joffrey was overruled by his father, Lord Corlys. Instead, the child was given a traditional Valyrian name, Jaqeris. Friends and brothers would call him Jace. The court was still rejoicing over the birth of the princess's child when her stepmother, Queen Alicent, also went into labour, delivering Viserys his third son, Daeron, whose colouring, unlike that of Jace, testified to his dragon blood. By royal command, the infants Jaqeris Valyrian and Daeron Targaryen shared a wet nurse until weaned. It was said that the king hoped to prevent any enmity between the two boys by raising them as milk brothers. If so, his hopes proved to be sadly forlorn. A year later, in 115 AC, there came a tragic mishap of the sort that shapes the destiny of kingdoms. The bronze bitch of Runestone, Lady Rhea Royce, fell from her horse whilst hawking and cracked her skull upon a stone. She lingered for 9 days before finally feeling well enough to leave her bed, only to collapse and die within an hour of rising. A raven was duly sent to Storm's End, and Lord Baratheon dispatched a messenger by ship to Bloodstone, where Prince Daemon was still struggling to defend his meagre kingdom against the men of the Triarchy and their Dornish allies. Daemon flew at once for the Vale. "To put my wife to rest," he said, though more like it was in the hopes of laying claim to her lands, castles, and incomes. In that he failed. Runestone passed instead to Lady Rhea's nephew, and when Daemon made appeal to the Eyrie, not only was his claim dismissed, but Lady Jane warned him that his presence in the Vale was unwelcome. Flying back to the Stepstones afterward, Prince Daemon landed at Driftmark to make a courtesy call upon his erstwhile partner in conquest, the Sea Snake, and his wife, the Princess Rhaenys. High Tide was one of the few places in the Seven Kingdoms where the king's brother could be confident he would not be turned away. There his eye fell upon Lord Corlys's daughter Lena, a maid of 22, tall, slender, and surpassingly lovely. Even Mushroom was taken with her beauty, writing that she was almost as pretty as her brother, with a great mane of silver-gold ringlets that fell down past her waist. Elena had been betrothed from the age of 12 to a son of the Sea Lord of Braavos, but the father had died before they could be wed, and the son soon proved a wastrel and a fool, squandering his family's wealth and power before turning up on Driftmark. Lacking a graceful means to rid himself of the embarrassment, but unwilling to proceed with the marriage, Lord Corlys had repeatedly postponed the wedding. Prince Daemon fell in love with Lena, the singers would have us believe. Men of a more cynical bent believe the prince saw her as a way to check his own descent. Once seen as his brother's heir, he had fallen far down in the line of succession, and neither the Greens nor the Blacks had a place for him. But House Valyrian was powerful enough to defy both parties with impunity. Weary of the Stepstones, and free at last of his bronze bitch, Daemon Targaryen asked Lord Corlys for his daughter's hand in marriage. The exiled Braavos he betrothed remained an impediment, but not for long. Daemon mocked him to his face so savagely the boy had no choice but to call him to defend his words with steel. Armed with Dark Sister, the prince made short work of his rival, and wed Lady Lena Valyrian a fortnight later, abandoning his hard-scrabble kingdom on the Stepstones. 5 other men followed him as kings of the Narrow Sea, until the brief and bloody history of that savage sellsword kingdom ended for good and all. Prince Daemon knew that his brother would not be pleased when he heard of his marriage. Prudently, the prince and his new bride took themselves far from Westeros soon after the wedding, crossing the Narrow Sea on their dragons. Some said they flew to Valyria, in defiance of the curse that hung over that smoking wasteland, to search out the secrets of the dragon lords of the old freehold. Mushroom himself reports this as fact in his testimony, but we have abundant evidence that the truth was less romantic. Prince Daemon and Lady Lena flew first to Pentos, where they were feted by the city's prince. The Pentoshi feared the growing power of the Triarchy to the south and saw Daemon as a valuable ally against the Three Daughters. From there, they crossed the disputed lands to Old Volantis, where they enjoyed a similar warm welcome. Then they flew up to Roin to visit Kohor and Norvos. In those cities, far removed from the woes of Westeros and the power of the Triarchy, their welcome was less rapturous. Everywhere they went, however, huge crowds turned out for a glimpse of Vhagar and Caraxes. The Dragon Riders were once again in Pentos when Lady Lena learned she was with child. Eschewing further flight, Prince Daemon and his wife settled in a manse outside the city walls as a guest of a Pentoshi magister, until such time as the babe was born. Meanwhile, back in Westeros, Princess Rhaenyra had given birth to a second son late in the year 115 AC. The child was named Lucerys, Luke for short. Septon Eustace tells us that both Ser Laenor and Ser Harwin were at Rhaenyra's bedside for his birth. Like his brother Jace, Luke had brown eyes and a healthy head of brown hair, rather than the silver-gilt hair of Targaryen princelings. But he was a large and lusty lad, and King Viserys was delighted with him when the child was presented at court. These feelings were not shared by his queen. "Do keep trying," Queen Alicent told Ser Laenor, according to Mushroom. "Soon or late you may get one who looks like you." And the rivalry between the Greens and Blacks grew deeper, finally reaching the point where the queen and the princess could scarce suffer each other's presence. Thereafter, Queen Alicent kept to the Red Keep, whilst the princess spent her days on Dragonstone, attended by her ladies, Mushroom, and her champion, Ser Harwin Strong. Her husband, Ser Laenor, was said to visit frequently. In 116 AC, in the free city of Pentos, Lady Lena gave birth to twin daughters, Prince Daemon's first true-born children. Prince Daemon named the girls Bela, after his father, and Rhaena, after her mother. The babes were small and sickly, alas, but both had fine features, silver-white hair and purple eyes. When they were half a year old and stronger, the girls and their mother sailed to Driftmark, whilst Daemon flew ahead with both dragons. From high tide he sent a raven to his brother in King's Landing, informing his grace of the birth of his nieces and begging leave to present the girls at court to receive his royal blessing. Though his hand and small council argued heatedly against it, Viserys consented, for the king still loved the brother who had been the companion of his youth. "Daemon is a father now," he told Grand Maester Melos. "He will have changed." Thus were the sons of Balon Targaryen reconciled for the second time. In 117 AC, on Dragonstone, Princess Rhaenyra bore yet another son. Ser Laenor was at last permitted to name a child after his fallen friend, Ser Joffrey Lonmouth. Joffrey, Valerian, was as big and red-faced and healthy as his brothers, but like them he had brown eyes, brown hair, and features that some at court called common. The whispering began again. Amongst the Greens it was an article of faith that the father of Rhaenyra's sons was not her husband Laenor, but her champion Harwin Strong. Mushroom says as much in his testimony, and Grand Maester Melos hints at it, whilst Septon Eustace raises the rumours only to dismiss them. Whatever the truth of these allegations, there was never any doubt that King Viserys still meant for his daughter to follow him upon the Iron Throne, and her sons to follow her in turn. By royal decree, each of the Valyrian boys was presented with a dragon's egg whilst in the cradle. Those who doubted the paternity of Rhaenyra's sons whispered that the eggs would never hatch, but the birth, in turn, of three young dragons gave the lie to their words. The hatchlings were named Vermax, Arax, and Taraxes, and Septon Eustace tells us that his grace sat Jace upon his knee atop the Iron Throne as he was holding court, and was heard to say, "One day this will be your seat, lad." Childbirth exacted a toll on the princess. The weight that Rhaenyra gained during her pregnancies never entirely left her, and by the time her youngest boy was born she had grown stout and thick of waist, the beauty of her girlhood a fading memory, though she was but 20 years of age. According to Mushroom, this only served to deepen her resentment of her stepmother, Queen Alicent, who remained slender and graceful at half again her age. The sins of the fathers are oft visited on the sons, wise men have said, and so it is for the sins of mothers as well. The enmity between Queen Alice